This is episode 58 of Our Modern Heritage, the Home and Family Culture Podcast. I'm your host, Jody Chafee. In this episode, I want to talk a little bit more about my situation where I talk about being in crisis mode, but also why sometimes having a crisis happens. I think that every family has a crisis at some point or another, and every family has some kind of trial or another that they're dealing with. So I want to start out telling a little story. This last weekend, my family got together for Thanksgiving. So I have six siblings. There are seven of us total, and we're all scattered across the country quite a bit. I have three siblings in Michigan and two siblings in Colorado and one in Arizona, and I'm in Virginia. And so it's very rare that my family gets to be together, all together. But this weekend, my brother was going to be in Michigan, and so I decided that my family and I would go to Michigan too, so that, you know, so many of us could be together. And so we had five siblings all together, and so my mom wanted to throw a big Thanksgiving dinner for everybody, since we would all be there, and it was going to be just a great time and a chance for everybody to just come together. So, excuse me, my mom had ordered these turkeys from the grocery store, and she thought she'd ordered them to be cooked and hot and done and ready to serve. But when she went to go pick them up, they were cold and ready to heat and serve. And so these turkeys needed another 2 or 3 hours to cook in the oven before they would be ready. But that wasn't going to work because we only had like a small window of time when everybody was going to be able to be together for this Thanksgiving dinner. So my two oldest siblings, they sprung to action and they ran out to the grocery store. I mean, it wasn't Thanksgiving Day or anything, so everything was open. It's just a regular day. They ran out to the grocery store. They grabbed some rotisserie chickens and some snacks, and they just really went out of their way to really help out my parents and all of us by allowing us to have a really great experience with this dinner. And my parents put the turkeys in the fridge for another day, and we were able to have a wonderful dinner. And then, you know, I had this conversation with my parents about family culture, and they brought this up with a few of my siblings. You know, we just were talking about, you know, how could we have a better relationship with one another? You know, my dad really feels strongly about trying to create more intimacy with our family so that, you know, if there's ever anything that we need, that we can rely on each other and we can talk to one another. And it got us thinking about this experience with the dinner and how, you know, this was almost like a mini crisis, and that really allowed especially my oldest siblings to show their you know, their generosity and their love for our family by doing so much to help out my parents and help us out. And it got me thinking about how, you know, there are only really a couple of ways that families bond. And one of them is intentionally creating opportunities for bonding. And then another way is a crisis. And obviously, that's not ideal, right? Nobody wants to create or have a crisis in their family in order to bring them together, especially when there is a risk factor there, right? If it's a severely traumatic crisis, it might actually split your family apart, right? And so that's not ideal. But at the same time, it got me thinking about how a lot of times a crisis really can strengthen your family. And I've mentioned on this podcast sometimes about Michael and I often feeling like we are in a crisis mode and we're going from one crisis to the next and putting out fires all the time, and how, you know, when your family culture is in a default mode, or it's in, you know, you're coasting or you're drifting and you are constantly in this crisis mode, then there is a potential threat to your family. And that's the same thing with any crisis. There is a potential threat to your family that it can tear your family apart. And so that was something that got me thinking about, you know, what about my experience with being in a crisis has taught me about my family and our family culture. And, you know, in a lot of ways, the experiences that Michael and I have been through have strengthened our marriage. You know, we went through a phase where we were living in a place where we didn't have any family living nearby. We didn't have any really close friends, and I had a huge falling out with my sister, and so we were alone, and we were in a really expensive place. We were students, we were starting our family, and we were definitely having a crisis. And in this situation, there is a potential for disaster and failure in like the worst kind of way. But there's also an opportunity for growth. And in an episode way back, if you go back and listen to my interview with Kathy Mellor, we talk about this concept of the hero's journey. And the hero's journey is a lot like what I talked about last week when I talked about divine discontent. A hero's journey is when somebody feels called or compelled to get out of their comfort zone and accomplish something that's challenging and difficult. And they go through tests, trials, and traps that can bring them down sabotage the journey, or they can be hard. They can really destroy your resolve. But along the way, somehow the hero finds a mentor. And this mentor could be, you know, something, could be anything that supports them and helps them along this journey. And along my journey, and I'm not saying I'm by any means a hero or anything, but I can definitely say that along my journey, my mentors have been books and scriptures and talks and my parents, and they've been my husband for sure. But most especially, you know, because of this time of feeling so much isolation, where my husband and I, you know, Michael and I really could have allowed that to become a catastrophe. But one important mentor that has sustained us has been Grace. And through that grace, we were able to learn about autonomy and to rely on God and grace more because of the crisis that we were going through. And so I just wanted to talk more about this, because I have talked about this a little bit and feeling like our crisis has been a catastrophe, and that it's been a hard trial, because it has. It really has. But I often think too, how, you know, we are invited and told that we should be grateful in every situation, and almost that we should be grateful for every situation. We should be grateful for our trials and tests and traps. But when you're going through them, it's really, really hard to be grateful for them. But at the same time, when you think about it, if you think about times when you've gone through, if you've ever gone through a crisis or a catastrophe, if you took that opportunity and you just faced it head on and just conquered it, then you're stronger because of it. And so even though it's really, really, really easy for Michael and I to look back over the last 10 years and go, that was a catastrophe. That was a disaster. We are trying really hard now to look at it and say, well, maybe it was just an opportunity for us to grow and be strengthened. And it was our hero's journey, the start of our hero's journey, to call us out of our comfort zone, to call us out of our, you know, our coasting and our default mode where we were, you know, just going with the flow and not questioning what we were doing or what we were being told, but that going through that inspired us to start asking more questions, to start changing our habits, to start changing our beliefs about things. And so in hindsight, it's a little bit easier to be grateful for those things, but I'm also learning to be grateful even in the situation that our trials and the things that we go through are designed to help us so that we can learn how to grow in spite of and often because of the crisis or because of the trial. You know, I used to think that every trial had a solution, or that every situation, every question had an answer. I used to really believe that. I really used to really think that if you had enough faith, or if you had enough resolve, or if you had enough commitment, or if you were smart enough to think through things and find solutions, then there was a solution. But I'm learning more and more that that's not always the case. There are people who get a diagnosis and the prognosis is for the rest of their life. You know, that they're never going to be healed from this thing. They're never going to be able to overcome this thing. And there's a reason. I know that's really hard to believe, and it's really hard to accept, and it's really hard to wrap your mind around, my mind around this idea that some things don't have a solution. But that doesn't mean that they aren't given to us for a reason, or that we don't have this problem for a reason. That what we do with this trial matters just as much as the trial itself. Does that make sense? I hope that makes sense. Because what I'm trying to convey, and what I hope to help my audience and you, my audience, understand, that something that I've been learning and what I've been trying to understand is this idea of living after the manner of happiness in spite of our trials and in spite of the hardships are things that will be what shapes us in the end. You know, that if we look back on our lives and we go, well, my whole life I struggled with X, Y, and Z, but because of that, I learned compassion, or because of that, I went out of my way to help people who X, Y, and Z, whatever it is that you feel that extra, you know, twinge of compassion for. And that's something that I've definitely experienced in what I've gone through, you know, that whenever I see a struggling mom, you know, I just want to go give her a hug and be like, it's okay, you're doing a great job, because of the things that I've gone through and the things I've experienced. You know, I just don't judge anymore what people are going through, because I know that everybody has a thing that they're going through, or everybody has a struggle, or whatever. And I think that compassion is a big part of what has come out of my personal crisis and the things that I've learned. So that's something that I hope to convey, that we are not supposed to just sit back and watch our trials impact our life or affect our lives or act upon our lives. We have to have the power to act upon our situation, to use our agency to, you know, do something with what we are still capable of doing. You know, right now my kids and I are listening to Wonder, and it's an interesting book so far. And it's really challenging to listen to, you know, and it's hard to listen to the experiences that kids go through and the things they struggle through, especially when they're different, and especially when they're as different as, you know, August is in the book, because it's one of those things that other kids and other people really do have a hard time accepting. But one of the things that stood out to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, you can write me, you can disagree with me, whatever, about this, because, you know, I was talking to Michael about it, and, you know, he kind of went through a similar situation when he was in school, because he has kyphosis, and he had to wear a back brace when he was in high school, and kids would tease him. They would call him names, and they would isolate him and alienate him, and it was really hard. And he told me so, and because I was like, you know, and he's like, no, wait a minute, because, and I'll explain why he said this. He said, look, when you are different, it's hard because kids are mean. And I don't disagree with him about that. I completely agree. He's right. It's hard. It's hard to have such a heavy burden and want to do anything like to improve. Like for the last 10 years, Michael and I have really struggled with having depression and stuff. And you know, one of the things that I've learned about it is that the people who need the most love are the hardest to love. And I think that that's how I felt, that I was hard to love because I was so just a downer. And a lot of times I was really a downer. And so, but it really has helped me and taught me that if somebody has depression, anxiety, things like that, they're the last people who are going to come out of their shell to ask for help. Okay, so that's something that, you know, if people are going through something, it's not easy to be their own solution. I get that. I really get that. But when I was listening to this book and I was like, you know, yes, I can see how August would have a really hard time, you know, to change his situation. But he was describing himself walking through the halls at school and all these kids staring at him looking away. And it was like, how different would his situation be if he had just looked up from behind his hair and said hi and smiled at them? Or if he started talking to these kids, how different their impression of him would be. And so I'm not saying that he's wrong or that people who have trials or struggles should do these things, because like I just said, it's not easy. But again, when I talked about this idea of divine discontent, and I talked about Dieter Uchtdorf's talk about it's not about the decisions, but what we do with after the decision that matters, I think that a lot of times in our situations, it's not the situation that matters. It's what we do with the situation that matters. And so it's like, in my situation, and in hindsight, I could have, you know, I wish these are things that I'd done, you know, like there was this one time I was going to school and I had two small children and I'd spent the morning lugging my children around campus, which, you know, any school, college campus, there's not like any convenient way to park and get onto campus. And so I had to park who knows where. I just felt like I had to walk forever and I was pushing a stroller. And it's not like college campuses are stroller friendly or kid friendly. So I'm like lugging my kids around and trying to find my textbooks for my classes. And I had to like go down an elevator, and the elevator is like buried behind all of these racks in the bookstore. And my kids are getting restless and annoyed because I'm trying to look for my books and not pay attention to them. And it was a really hard situation. And then half of my books weren't even there. And so I was flustered. I was frustrated. I'm sweating from lug pushing around the stroller on this warm, you know, fall day or early summer day, late summer day. And after that, I was going to a little play group for my toddlers. And I show up and I know I was just totally grimacing because I was just like, I had this awful day and I felt like nobody cared. And when I go to school, I'm a mom. And so that's weird because I'm an adult and I'm a mom. And then I go to meet up with my other mom people and none of them are students or career people. And so I was just felt like a really odd person out. And nobody talked to me. And I know that it's because I had this look on my face that was like, totally abrasive, right? Like nobody wanted to talk to this person who's obviously having a hard time. But at the same time, I was really upset because I was like, why doesn't anybody care that I'm upset or that I'm having such a hard time? Like nobody cared. And it was really frustrating. And I even talked to somebody that I cared about or thought I could trust. And she's like, well, Jody, you don't talk to anybody. You don't get out of your way to like show other people that you care. And it's like, I kind of, whatever. But it really frustrated me too, because I was like, but I'm the one that's struggling. Why doesn't anybody care that I'm struggling? And it was really upsetting to me. In hindsight, I wish that I'd been there to tell myself, look, nobody's going to care if you are just sitting back and hiding your face and hiding your struggles. Nobody's going to care. Nobody's going to know. That's really what it's about. Nobody knows. And so this whole idea of this crisis or these trials is that you have got to, this is what I would tell myself, you have to be vulnerable. Nobody's going to know about your situation or know how to help you if they don't know what's going on. And sometimes they don't know until there's a crisis, which is unfortunate because it should not take a crisis for people to care. And so up to that point, we need to be able to be vulnerable, to be able to share and talk to people about what's going on, to open up and be kind to other people. And so that's what I wish I could have told myself in this situation is, look, if you want your situation to improve, you've got to figure out what you can do in spite of this situation. What are you going to do because of this situation? Because it's not about the crisis, but what you do with the situation that matters. And so that's what I wish I could have told myself. I said, look, nobody knows. Nobody knows that you just spent the whole morning lugging your kids around campus only to find a third or half of your books. So you're going to have to go back and do it all over again. Nobody knows. But you have to let them know. Or just not worry about it. Because they're not going to understand anyways. Or they might. Or maybe next time they would say, well, let me watch your kids next time you have to go up to campus. Maybe. Anyways, that was maybe a little bit too much of my personal reflections, but it was real. It was a very real and hard situation for me. But how does this relate to family culture? Well, I think that when we as a family, if we're relying on a crisis to bring our families together, then it's too late. We have got to be able to have intimate conversations with our siblings, with our parents, to talk about things, and with our children, to talk about things that matter. We're not going to suddenly establish our legacy when they're adults. They're not going to suddenly want to talk to us when they're teenagers if we didn't care about the little stuff when they were younger. But this ability to grow comes from being open and being able to face our trials on this hero's journey with resilience, with vulnerability. And resilience is all that resilience is, just the ability to cope constructively with situations and having the attitude that this challenge can be overcome. And I did this whole coping course that I did that was for free, and I'm about to launch it as an actual course of ways and resources that help to develop constructive coping strategies. Because I think that there are things that in our lives that may be missing that we may need and help in order to help us to be more resilient, to be able to spring back from trials and crises in order to grow. So the other way that, you know, we can strengthen our families is, you know, we can have crisis or we can have intentional opportunities where we shape our family culture through conversations, through visualization. You know, what is our family going to look like in 20 years? What do we want from our family in 20 years? Through having, creating mission statements, through creating family mottos. You know, we just watched that new movie, that new Christmas movie, The Christmas Chronicles, you know, and it says something like, you know, the dad gives the kid this pocket knife that's like, a Pierce always sees it through, right? And if you haven't seen the movie, it's really cute. And this whole idea of having that motto was, you know, inspiring to the kids that, you know, even though their dad wasn't there anymore to reinforce that motto, they still knew it and they believed in it. And it's what supported them through their struggles. And so having those conversations, creating your family mottos, creating your family mission statements, creating a vision, and then also talking about your values and your standards, what's really important to you as a family. You've got to be intentional about those things and come together and have these conversations. A lot of times having the conversations can be disruption enough to make those things, to bring them out, to be vulnerable enough. You know, you don't have to have a crisis. You can just do something that's disruptive enough to bring out those important conversations, to bring out your values, to bring out these topics that are so important to your family. And so, you know, that's another thing about this hero's journey and the divine discontent is that the divine discontent and being called out to do something is really a disruption. It's got to disrupt your life enough that you change something or that you do something that helps your family grow. So that's mostly what I wanted to get out of this episode or this conversation about a crisis, that your family is going to go through a crisis. That's just normal, but it's what you do with the crisis. It's what you do with the situation that matters. You know, you can put your head down and cover your face and hide your situation, or you can allow the crisis to destroy you and become a catastrophe and a disaster, or you can use the crisis as an opportunity to bond. Another thing is that if you can avoid a crisis, that the best way to avoid the crisis is by talking, by bringing out the best in each other, and just disrupt, finding ways to disrupt the status quo in a way that's good. Because sometimes all it takes is a conversation to get the ball rolling of ways that you can learn about what's going wrong, what can be better, what's going right, what can be improved, and these kinds of things. That's what I love about family culture, an intentional family culture. Every family has a culture, but if you're not intentional about it, then you're just falling back on what is your old customs or there's nothing there at all. One of the things that came up in my conversation with my parents is, you know, when we were kids, we would often go to family reunions, my dad's side, and I told him, my dad, you know, I was like, when I was a kid, we'd go to these family reunions, and to me, they meant fun and games and laughing and everybody joking around and having a good time. But somewhere along the way, that idea of our family kind of has like broken apart and got lost. And there isn't anybody that has been able to like step in to reestablish what our family stands for. And it's really tragic because, you know, those memories that I have of our family culture or our family reunions as a kid were just so amazing because we would play these amazing games and we would just, oh man, we would just all have a great time. And now it's kind of, I haven't gone to a reunion in a long time actually. And it's hard to because what the family reunions meant to me isn't there anymore. And so that we've kind of fallen into just kind of a bland family culture where nothing is really happening. And so then what? It's really a shame because our family has always been really close and I still feel really close with, you know, my uncles and aunts and cousins and things like that. But we haven't seen each other in a long time and it's hard. So that's my challenge, is to do something that brings your family culture out and talk about it, disrupt what's going on so that it doesn't take a crisis to bring it out. But if you do have to endure a crisis, turn it around to turn it into something good, something that can strengthen your family. You can follow me on any podcasting platform. That's your favorite platform. I appreciate if you would comment and rate and share this episode and any other episode that inspires you. You can follow me on Facebook and Instagram and Pinterest at Family Culture Podcast, and I'm on Twitter at _FamilyCulture. And you can check out the show notes for this and all my episodes at homeandfamilyculture.com. Mother Teresa once said, "If you want to change the world, go home and love your family." Thank you for listening.